Welcome back to another episode of the Conduct Detrimental NIL Hour. And today, Mike, I think we're calling this the NIL Heisman Hour, right?
That's right. That's right. The NIL Heisman Hour. And what could have been, I guess you could also say, for these Heisman Award winners.
That's right. Lots to get into. My name is Taryn Sharma, as always, with my co-host, Mike Lawson. We're missing Holly today. Excited for her, her first week of 3L, her last year of law school. In a few months, she'll be using Themis Bar Review, which is the best bar review company in the galaxy. So today on the show, we are going to quickly run down some of the most exciting stories of the week. The big one here being Reggie Bush, the defamation lawsuit. And then we had some interesting stories, new documentaries, sports documentaries with the Untold series on Netflix with Johnny Manziel and also Urban Meyer and the Florida Gators, the Swamp Kings is what it's called. Mike, those are coming under a little fire, aren't they?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, we've talked about this before when NIL really was finally, I guess, allowed or whatever you want to call it, not being restricted, if you will, by the NCAA. When we got into this wild, wild west, we talked about all of these big name players, Johnny Manziel, Tim Tebow, Reggie Bush, all these players who were accused of earning money or payment before NIL was allowed, the term of amateurism and things like that, of the success of college athletes and the money around college athletics before the NIL world kind of opened up. So it's kind of going deeper into, you know, what actually was happening during those times now that I guess you could really open those floodgates because it is now allowed. So like it's kind of a story for future athletes and how they can kind of move forward through the NIL world.
Yeah, also demonstrative of still what is allowed and what might draw scrutiny, whether right or wrong, from the NCAA. So let's start, I think, with Johnny Manziel. That's the, I guess, the oldest of these three stories. So interesting documentary in a lot of ways. I think that in the bits and pieces that I've seen of it, it is kind of like a reclamation project for Manziel. And I think that that's to be expected with any of these when the focus of the show is going to be participating, they're not going to necessarily sign on to be dragged through the mud, right?
Yeah, I think there's a sense of like some sort of approval here, right? They're being interviewed by the, so these are both, we'll get to Swamp Kings after this, but this one is, yeah, Netflix's Untold series here. And we've talked about some of the other Untold series that Netflix has done. So yeah, when they sit down and do these interviews, I mean, there's got to be some sort of agreement and, you know, understanding of what's actually going to be put out for these documentaries.
Even along these lines, as good as Last Dance is, there aren't like a ton of criticisms of Michael Jordan in The Last Dance, right? Like even his gambling thing is kind of just glossed over. The person that really looks the worst in Last Dance is Scottie Pippen. So here, I think it's more of a tragedy, right, with Manziel. He clearly had a lot of things going on, a lot of things that are brought on by fame, I think. Didn't necessarily have people around him to help with that, right?
My first impression, too, is just it's sad to see what Johnny Manziel went through, right? Such a young talent, so valuable, really highly touted, obviously won the Heisman Award and was drafted, first round at the NFL. And was like really had this big expectation on him. Now he definitely lived up to that, and you know Johnny Football, and the documentary goes into JFF where he was, you know, Johnny F and Football, and he loved that persona that he was. And we've seen this with other athletes too. I mean, it's not just Johnny Manziel or Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow, I think, was a little more tame than this, but we've Jameis Winston was very similar at Florida State, so. Like you have these personas that these athletes who are really highly touted, very talented, going to be NFL stars. And then you have it in the realm and the context of not the proper support that student athletes were getting, not the mental health support and mental health services that should have been provided to him because he was under a lot of stress. And then obviously alcohol and drug addiction too, where he did stints in rehab here that they talk about in the documentary. So not having the proper I guess, you know, backing and support that these student athletes, and we've talked about that today. We talked about that with what should student athletes have access to now, and whether or not they should have access to medical benefits and have the access to mental health support and alcohol and drug addiction support and things like that. These are things that we see professional athletes go through, and we've actually seen this happen recently in Major League Baseball, where Domingo Germán checked himself into a rehab facility. That's all within the realm of professional sports here. They have that support. Johnny Manziel didn't have that support. And really, he was put under this spotlight of, like, he is really just that persona and Johnny Football. And that's him. And that's how he is, you know, rubbing his fingers again. You know, Johnny Manziel, Money Manziel, right?
Yeah.
But we never got, like, behind the curtain where, like, he was going through a lot. Like, he had some traumatic experiences that he really didn't have the support necessary because he was a student athlete and he just didn't get that support. And then obviously you have the he was making money, you know, when he shouldn't have been making money during the non-NIL world.
Yeah. And how about that story? Basically that his friend came up with the story that he came from oil money and that's why he had all of this cash around. Ultimately, he does get in trouble, right, for signing all of those autographs and being paid for that. But it looks like there was a lot more going on there.
Right. And we have this, we've talked about this before, about student athletes and their impressionability, right? These impressionable young athletes, there's this kind of like, we've talked about before, like gambling and now how gambling's allowed in college athletics. And you have this impressionable student athlete who gets approached by a bookie who's like, hey, like, miss a free throw if it's, you know, it's in your best interest, blah blah blah, that type of stuff. Like, this impressionable youth athletics here, where you had all these people that were around Johnny Manziel and they were doing these things, like scheming, being like, we could make more money, we can do this and this and this, right? Like, we can have you, you know, get an autograph signing business and have you earn this type of money. So, you know, people that were just not in Johnny Manziel's corner that were there to help him or guide him, right? Something that an agent can do now for student athletes who are earning name, image, and likeness, right? Because this was all black market, if you will, under the table, not allowed. There was nobody really looking out for the best interests of Johnny Manziel.
Yeah, and I think we've come some way with mental health. Some programs are better about it than others, but I think that that's something that's still out there and is still a need. And that was something that Maddie Salamone talked about when she joined us. So I do think to some point, you know, Manziel has been in plenty of trouble, has wronged people. He's wronged his previous significant other. He got in trouble for that, for domestic violence. And so in the same way as Germán, right, like, an adult person needs to take responsibility for that. But it seems like there were so many things going on that when you're famous, like, you get away with a lot of stuff too, right? And so, you know, maybe that accountability was never demanded until it was. And so that's prevented him from moving forward. But it did seem that by the end, he was kind of in a better place, right? Is that the sense that you got?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everything that he's gone through and all the struggles he's gone through and all the trouble he's got himself, but where he is today, right, it seems that he's definitely in a better place. I mean, like I said, like, just nobody, I mean, yes, he definitely, as a 18 to 21 year old male, like, there's a sense of accountability there. But at the same time, like, you've got guys around him like that should have been helping him or should have known, like, he was being, you know, thrown around like a show pony, the in front of, you know, reporters, saying ridiculous things, you know, out of line things. And like, it was just Money Manziel, Johnny Manziel. Like, that's just was his persona. And, you know, even his coaches, like, it's just like, a lot of it was like, what was happening? You know, how can it be, you know, it should have been preventable. How could they have prevented it?
Yeah. So that was one of the untold stories that's come out in this last month that was highly anticipated. The other is Swamp Kings, covers Urban Meyer's tenure at the University of Florida, two national championships, really were the class of the SEC for that time period, basically until Nick Saban builds Alabama into the monster that they are today. So what were your takeaways from Swamp Kings and Urban Meyer puff piece or what?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing, right? Like what you just said about what we were talking about with Johnny Manziel. Like I feel like the consensus is that a lot of people are having on Twitter is like, it's quote unquote an untold series, but there was a lot left unsaid.
Let's detail some of those specific ones. I think a lot of people forget that Cam Newton was at the University of Florida, got kicked out, stealing a laptop, threw it out of the window. And then when that was then found that he was expelled from the school, went to Bliss, which is a community college in Texas, played really well there as a JUCO, and then went to Auburn, maybe to the highest bidder. And there's basically no mention of him, no mention of the Pouncey twins, who between those two and Aaron Hernandez are like the three-headed monster. Essentially, the only mention of Aaron Hernandez is not, you know, all the trouble that he might have gotten in, or maybe that there were signs of, but that a bar fight that he was a part of was actually Tim Tebow took responsibility for it. So it's such a bummer because you wait for these things and you think that you're going to get the juicy stories, right? But when people are the people that were there are involved, I think it just makes it really difficult because it's not impartial.
Yeah, I mean, there was so much more. I'm like trying to scroll through all of the things that people were making checklists on Twitter, like Percy Harvin when he choked out the wide receivers coach, the receiving coach, Carlos Dunlap when he was arrested before the SEC championship game. There was, who was it? Chris Rainey threatening to kill his girlfriend. Like there was a lot of like other like criminal aspects of surrounding this team that like just kind of went unsaid.
Not to mention whatever happened with Zach Smith and his wife, which ultimately, you know, led to Urban being suspended for 3-4 games when he was at Ohio State, right?
Right. And most people are just saying that it's more of like a nostalgia piece where it's less untold and more just nostalgia, where it's just the highlights of this Florida Gators program for that 4-year period, not even going into really the 2010 season of Urban Meyer.
With the heart problems and ultimately the decision to leave.
To leave, right. Exactly.
Yeah. If you're a Florida fan, it's got to be pretty sweet to watch it. I don't know about any other impartial sports fan that was hoping to watch it.
This one, I think, left more of a sour taste in people's mouth than the Johnny Manziel one for context of like leaving things unsaid. Obviously, you still have, you know, some of these names, well, not some of them, really just two, maybe three if you talk about Cam Newton, but Cam Newton wasn't even mentioned. But, you know, Tim Tebow's still present in professional sports, either, you know, as an announcer and then his stint in minor league baseball, and then obviously Urban Meyer still being around. So we just talked about it. Like it's kind of sensitive in the sense that they might have to give the all clear on what's going to be, you know, put out to the public. And maybe they didn't want some of that in, but, you know, it shouldn't be called untold. You know, it should be untold with an asterisk if that's the case.
Yeah, mostly previously told. So you mentioned how much money the Manziels and Tebows could have made. And I think there was no one in the mid-2000s that was more electric than Reggie Bush, 2005 Heisman winner. Those 2004 and 2005 USC teams coached by Pete Carroll with Matt Leiner were as good of college football teams as I can remember. And it took a superhuman performance from Vince Young, another guy that would have absolutely crushed NIL, to take them down in one of the greatest college football games ever played in the national championship. He has filed a defamation lawsuit against the NCAA. And just so you can remind everyone, Mike, what is it that a public person or celebrity needs to prove when it comes to defamation?
You need to show actual malice.
Yeah. It's a pretty difficult standard to hit, right?
Yeah, very. It's a very, very high threshold.
So why do you think that Reggie Bush has chosen to file this defamation lawsuit?
Maybe it's a more of a legal tactic per se on Reggie Bush's camp, where there was a defamation lawsuit that was brought by Reggie Bush's former position coach, Todd McNair, as it, you know, related to his connection to the infractions case being, you know, Reggie Bush under this pay for pay scheme that ultimately led to him losing his Heisman. But USC, because of this infraction, you know, when they went into this investigation, USC was forced to remove themselves from any sort of association with Reggie Bush for 10 years. And that, I think, ended in 2020. So then what popped up in 2021 was the NCAA settled the defamation suit of Todd McNair. But, you know, he was the running back coach in 2004 to 2010. And he, you know, because of this settlement, maybe Reggie Bush felt that there was more opportunity for him to either get his Heisman Award back, be reinstated as a Heisman Trophy Award winner, or some sort of settlement or compensation. I don't know. This could just be some sort of, you know, character, you know, to trying to reestablish his character, because it's quote not as bad as everybody saw or thought it was, because Reggie Bush was being, you know, essentially they found that he was being paid to play as the running back. But now the name, image, and likeness is out, like, people are, I guess, more lenient with the pay for play scheme. But I mean, Taryn, what's the biggest difference here, though? Right, we're talking about name, image, and likeness, but what's the difference between what we're seeing now with athletes and name, image, and likeness, and what Reggie Bush was under?
Yeah, I mean, the difference, right, is like endorsements and appearances, as opposed to receiving money from an agent, which is what happened in Reggie Bush's case. That his family was taken care of, that he was taken care of, that they were provided with a home in San Diego to live in while he was at USC. Those are all elements that still would draw scrutiny from the NCAA, because they're not permitted under the rules as we know them. And, you know, maybe that changes. Maybe you, with the number of different attacks upon the NCAA that we see some sort of change in that way. But I think it's pretty clear what Bush is doing here, in that this is his second kind of attempt to get the NCAA to reconsider his case. So when NIL, when the interim policy came out, Reggie Bush made an attempt to get his Heisman back. Now, he forfeited his Heisman trophy to the Heisman Trust in 2010. And the Heisman Trust told him, we'd be happy to accept you back into the family as long as the NCAA restores your 2005 records. Now, that's the season that Bush won the Heisman for. And the NCAA said that they're not going to relitigate it, essentially, but they took it a step further. They gave comment to ESPN, an NCAA spokesperson did, saying, quote, although college athletes can now receive benefits from their names, images, and likenesses through activities like endorsements and appearances, NCAA rules still do not permit pay-for-play type arrangements. The NCAA infractions process exists to promote fairness in college sports. The rules that govern fair play are voted on, agreed to, and expected to be upheld by all NCAA member schools. And it's that pay-for-play element that is specifically being targeted by Bush and his attorneys as defamation. But do you think that the NCAA meets that threshold for actual malice, that they knowingly are disseminating information that is false about Reggie Bush in an effort to besmirch his character?
No, I don't think so, especially since at this stage, we're well beyond that. It's not like the NCAA is actively making statements still about Reggie Bush. They're just sticking to their investigation back at the time that they made their final determination that he was to turn in his Heisman. But there would need to be some sort of, it's also like a space for the NCAA to kind of stand their ground, because they don't want to open the door to this retroactive award, I guess you could say, where they're already facing federal lawsuits for violation of the antitrust laws for not allowing name, image, and likeness. You know, we've talked about, you know, all of those cases, the current one being, I think that's House versus NCAA for for kind of back pay for restricting athletes from earning compensation off the field, you know, outside of the realm of athletics. But pay for play has always been and still is a violation of NCAA rules. And they still have not made any sort of determination or rule or adaptation or proposal that NCAA athletes will earn a salary in the form of pay for play. So they made their determination, and I don't know if there's any actual malice as it relates to Reggie Bush. It's that he was being paid to be the running back for the USC Trojans, and that was their determination. They're not gonna go back on that.
Yeah, you know, I think that they also benefit here because it's not. They're basically saying that what Reggie Bush received in terms of impermissible benefits falls into the same bucket as these pay-for-play type arrangements, but it's not specifically saying that in 2005, Reggie Bush and his family were receiving money in exchange for his play at USC. It's not stated that clearly. So it's not that you can't draw that conclusion that the NCAA spokesperson is specifically talking about Reggie Bush, but it does require the Bush attorneys to take it one step further. It's one step removed. And so it's just, in that sense, I think requiring even more effort in order to prove this. And given that it's already a high standard, I think it's going to be very difficult for him to meet. Now, I think Reggie Bush should get back his Heisman because I don't think that him receiving those benefits really has anything to do with how he played. In 2005, he was the best player during the regular season. And then Vince Young turned into Superman. And so I think that Reggie Bush was one of the most deserving winners in the history of the Heisman Trophy. And for that reason, he should have his Heisman. But I think that this is going to be a very difficult case for him to win, given the threshold he has to meet and that what he has done, what he has accepted, isn't necessarily permitted even under a changing standard as it applies to athlete compensation.
It's not new, this retroactive nature. I mean, I'm from, you know, I went to Syracuse. It's been thrown around that Jim Boeheim should get all of his wins back as well for after the infractions that kind of came about. And you could make the same argument that the infractions that he might have done didn't really impact, you know, recruiting violations can get you there, but, you know, like, you know, certain violations, certain infractions don't necessarily correlate to wins and losses. But that's unfortunately just what the NCAA ends up doing. Whenever there's some sort of large major infraction, they remove statistics and they remove wins and things like that. So it's not new that there's a retroactive, you know, fight for getting these statistics back, getting these wins back, getting the Heisman Trophy back. But, you know, going after the NCAA for defamation of character, I mean, was Reggie Bush's actual character tarnished following this? Like how would they know, you know, the certain degree after they made a factual determination on him violating an NCAA rule?
Like I said, just going to be very difficult for him, but great player. He deserves to have all the accolades, I think, but I don't think anyone even considers him to not be the Heisman Trophy winner that year. Right. Basically, he just doesn't have the bust, which, you know, it stinks. And again, I think, you know, he should have it because he was the best, but I agree with what you're saying. And I think that it's a strong parallel to what you're saying with Boeheim. But so we can put a pin in that one. We'll follow it as it continues to develop. But let's finish up here, Mike. The Mets suck. The Yankees suck. We don't have a lot to look forward to in October, but we do have college football coming up. And we have the NFL, for that matter. Tell me, what are you excited about this fall, this football season?
Yeah, I mean, this is the first year of, like, big conference realignment. So college football with conference realignment, interesting to see how that plays out. Interesting to see really the transportation aspect of it too, right? We've got West Coast teams coming to the East Coast. We've got a lot of moving parts here for college football season. I'm excited for the NFL season too. I think this is an interesting year where, you know, I don't see a dominant team yet. Obviously, you're still going to have your standouts of Kansas City Chiefs, right? They've been the powerhouse for the last couple of years. But last year, the Buffalo Bills weren't as good as they should have been. Are they going to be better this year? I don't know. I think the Dolphins look great if Tua can really stay healthy. It's going to be an exciting year. I think there's a lot of talent that's kind of spread out across the NFL, which should make a lot of great games. So I'm excited. I'm very excited for the NFL season.
I am super excited for it to start. I'm excited for like the week three, Texas is back, and then they go on to lose a bunch of games. I am excited. The Gophers have one of the toughest schedules in the country, so I'm excited to see how they do with that. They have a lot of pieces coming back. They have basically a first-year starter under center, so I'm excited for that. Also, just, you know, I love the Big Ten. To see if Ohio State can get back at Michigan. I think it's going to be even tougher for them this year than it was last year. They've got to go up to Ann Arbor. McCarthy's going to be a year older. They've got Edwards. They've got Corum back. And Ohio State is going to be having a new starter who they haven't even named yet. So lots to look forward to this season. Football is awesome.
Are you excited for your first season, Dan Snyderless with the Commanders?
Oh, dude. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've already been celebrating that, right? I think that there is a different energy around the team. I don't think that they're going to be super good. I think that probably at best they'll win like 7 games, but just to not have him there, I think it just changes the vibes. And maybe the team isn't cursed anymore because there's not like a wretched, despicable human being at the helm.
Do they change their team name at the end of the year?
No, I think that the name is going to stick. I think that, you know, the easiest way to get rid of the Dan Snyder era is for them to ditch the name and just come up with a new one. But I think that there's some interest in stability, and the name stinks, but it's fine, I guess. And so I think they'll ride out with this name. The best thing that they can do is win some football games. But I think people are just going to have so much goodwill stored up for Josh Harris and this ownership group in the same way that it was when the Wilpons were gone for the Mets. Yeah. And Steve Cohen has come in. But, you know, it's really easy to do little things right, right? Like the Cohens make an extreme effort to be involved in philanthropy, to interact with the fans. They go up to the upper deck and they give fans their tickets and bring them down to the lower level. They reinstituted Old Timers Day and other things that Mets fans wanted to see. And he's also spent money on the team. I think that Harris has already shown that he has the ability to do that. So sitting in the stands with the fans, Dan Snyder could never. They'd tear him apart. Going up into the booth with Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, even though it was awkward, I think it was endearing. And, you know, this guy has been an owner of a lot of different teams. I mean, he owns your team, the 76ers.
That's right.
And, I mean, even though the Sixers haven't gotten over the hump, he at least cares enough to always give them the resources to be the best that they can be. And so I'm excited for him to bring in that same mindset in Washington and be able to see what happens. But yeah, it's definitely exciting. It doesn't even feel real. Like, I've been excited about it. I've been celebrating, but, you know, I think it'll take a little while for it to really sink in that he's gone. He's dead. I don't have to ever think about him again. I'm mad that he has $7 billion now, but at least I don't have to think about him.
Yeah, what a unique perspective too. For you, you know, the last couple of years, you've had some major ownership changes in two of your teams, the Mets and the Commanders. I also saw coming out of Washington too, a like revival of the name of the Redskins name, that there's a petition going around that they want, you know, the Redskins name to return to Washington. I don't know if that'll end up actually happening, but
yeah. I don't see that happening because it wasn't even like people, fans being upset about the name. It was corporate sponsors especially in the wake of the racial reckoning in the summer of 2020, that we're more concerned about the name. So I don't see it coming back. And I think that the name also stood between them and having a new stadium in DC. And I think that that's something that Josh Harris is going to get done. And I think it's going to get done in DC, which is the best thing for the franchise, to move them out of the suburbs, a place that's impossible to get to, that's always a disaster with traffic. You move them back into the city, a historic site, somewhere that they've had a ton of success. And not only are you then riding off of the nostalgia and connecting these two eras, the Redskins era and the Commanders era, but I think it's just going to be a better experience putting it into the city and allowing people to travel via public transportation and get there more easily.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a lot to look forward to this season. Well, as we were saying, you're a Commanders fan, but I'm seeing the Vikings come into town. I'm watching my girlfriend and I and a couple of friends are going to Philadelphia for the Eagles Vikings game, which should be interesting. It's the home opener in Philadelphia, so that should be exciting.
And, that's on a Thursday, right?
It is Thursday Night Football.
Nice. Kirk under the lights, dude. That's, you don't right. have a chance.
You like that? You like that? Just a little bit of what to watch for. We'll cover it and we'll watch it going forward. There is a litigation that did start on Monday. New York Knicks have filed suit against a former employee and the Toronto Raptors for allegedly illegally procuring and disclosing proprietary information. So the Knicks employee basically brought over some proprietary information to the Raptors. So filed in the U.S. District Court and federal court in Manhattan. We're going to see what kind of what moves forward here, that they're accusing or alleging that the Raptors have thousands of confidential files that are, you know, playbooks and, you know, preparations and you know, a bunch of different scouting reports and things like that. Some interesting accusations and allegations. Obviously, a lot has to shake out here in discovery and what comes of it. But we'll cover it more in detail probably later on in the podcast. But just something to keep looking at as we move forward. Just a little business here. We've mentioned it a million times, but we are a Spotify platform here. We do broadcast to all platforms, but we are fortunate enough to have our platform be based on Spotify. Here's a message from our platform, Spotify.
Thanks again to Spotify and Themis, our sponsors. Thank you, Mike, for joining me. And it was a great conversation with you as always, buddy. And I'm excited for the fall and for everything to come. And so for Mike, myself, Holly, the Dans, and the entire Conduct Detrimental family, we will catch you on another episode. Conduct Detrimental.